episode of the Wrestling Is Everything Is Wrestling podcast. That's W-E-W for all of you alliteration marks. We are here to discuss exactly that, everything that is wrestling, and how wrestling is everything. I am the American Dragon, Tom Nix. That amazing giggle is the pride of Orange County, Mike Perto.
Hi, everybody.
And also with us is your Olympic hero, Brian Kluger.
Well, hello, guys.
So we are here to enlighten you and thrill you with talk about the most obscure, most trivia-centric things about wrestling. So to kick that off, we're going to talk about this underwatch program called Monday Night Raw.
I want to say real quick before we get started that my boyhood dream was to be on a wrestling podcast where the title was a palindrome. So thank you to everybody who's been a part of Spur helping me fulfill something I've been dreaming about since I was a little boy.
Absolutely. And the nice thing is we have an abbreviation for titling is everything is wrestling. It can also stand, which is what we're going to give you. So here we go. So Raw this week. Thanks to Mr. Brian Kluger, I was able to attend the Corpus Christi Raw, which saw the very last appearance of the Beast Brock Lesnar before he fights Randy Orton at SummerSlam. It had the very first appearance of the Demon Balor on Monday Night Raw. So Mike, how did you react to seeing the full Demon paint on Raw? How did it compare to his previous entrances, and what happened to you?
Actually, a little better. I was on the TakeOver specials. Demon entrance in a big arena. I liked it from the perspective of the, you know, I thought it was a really good performance. Well, I guess it was a really good performance by the Demon King. But, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week when our podcast didn't have a title yet. I was a little disappointed to see him come out and then engage in fisticuffs with Seth Rollins, because I think that moment would have been a lot more powerful had it been in front of the Brooklyn crowd at SummerSlam itself. Not so much the fact that it's in Brooklyn, but just the fact that it's the second biggest show of the year, and its view of this, like, superpower, I think it would have been more effective. Find really interesting, though, departure to me from how they've treated an NXT is that he had her elements to his entrance. You know, the lights were flickering. He does, in fact, have some superpowers, whereas in NXT, he just kind of was a demon, and there wasn't really anything... I'm sorry, they did that one where there were multiple demons. But in any event, I think that they sort of built in a more mystical element to this, and I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so, Brian, how did you feel about them giving this away on Raw?
I was, which part of it? Because there was so much they gave away on Raw that they should have saved for... What specifically, what do you want me to talk about?
The whole demon entrance, the whole demon persona, are you kind of thinking, Mike, where they should have held this off until Sunday? We're going to get to the whole, hey guys, there's a pay-per-view match between Rusev and Roman. Here it is 6 days before in its entirety.
Yeah, so yeah, the Demon King, you know, I'm excited that we've been talking about this for months on another podcast, that we cannot wait for the Raw audience or pay-per-view audience to see Finn Balor's demon come out at a pay-per-view of this magnitude, or even Shinsuke. And for them, because what I wish they would have done is, like, maybe the lights go out in the whole arena, and like, he pops up for a second, then it goes completely black, and there was smoke, so you really couldn't see him. But then he came out full garb, the whole thing, the whole entrance. And it, like, okay, why? So you, because he only came out as a demon in pay-per-views for NXT, for NXT takeovers. And to have this on a Raw, I mean, I guess I understand it from a business standpoint to get the people who do not have the network possibly to buy the network, you know, for the pay-per-view to see the demon. But it was a letdown. It's like, okay, everybody's seeing them now. What's the big surprise at SummerSlam? Because SummerSlam is technically the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. So I just thought maybe it's part of the brand split where they just don't know what to do. They don't have, then it's still 3 hours that they have to do these things, but it seemed like they kind of did SummerSlam at Raw, which was good for you, Tom, because you were there. But yeah, I thought
the
what?
Go ahead, finish your thought. I apologize for cutting you off.
Oh, no, no. I thought that they should have saved him the whole entrance, the whole garb for SummerSlam, because I think it would have made a bigger impact. Maybe, like, show him, like, for a second and then cut to black, but no, not the way they did it. No, not at all. Was not happy about it.
So, obviously it was a treat to see him as close as we got to see him at Raw. I've seen him at the, live in the paint before at the Dallas Takeover, but I, you know, my feet were basically all the way in the back of the building, so yeah, I just saw him more of a technicality than actually seeing him do the full thing up close. But, and I think originally I felt the same way. I was kind of like, hey, what a weird decision to show this off 6 days before your, you know, essentially second biggest event of the year. With, I mean, honestly, if we're comparing cards, I think the SummerSlam card is even better than the WrestleMania card, realistically. But I think the more I've sat on it and thought about it, I think there's a really interesting way they could do this. And I think you all kind of hit on it, was like, you know, when they did takeovers, he would only come out in the pay-per-views. Or on this one, like, he came out and you got to see the makeup and you kind of got to see the slight character change. It's not. It wasn't a huge character change. He did a lot of the same moves that he did as, you know, regular Finn Balor. But now that we're heading into the second biggest pay-per-view of the year, that's going to have very high production values and really put an emphasis on everything. Okay, you saw the demon on Raw. What is the demon going to look like when it really matters? You know what I mean? Like how different is that paint going to look? How much more spooky is the entrance going to be? How much more crazy is he going to fight on a huge stage where it really matters for a title and not just kind of come out and do a couple punches?
Yeah.
So yeah, I thought it was weird, but I think I think it's a good idea in the long run to get people who otherwise would never have heard of Finn Balor or maybe saw him in a couple of ads here and there but never actually watched NXT, to get them to be like, okay, yeah, this guy is something special, and SummerSlam is an absolute must. Because I feel like if you just teased it and showed a little bit of teeth or a little bit of, you know, like the black and red, and didn't really go too far into it, people might tune in because it's going to be something different. But because they didn't see it in action, now they're not salivating for more. You know, they want to see this guy compete in a whole match. Like, can you hurt him? Can you pin him? Can you even do anything to this guy? He seems invincible. That's going to be the draw. So I think in hindsight, I think them quote unquote giving it away is potentially a huge way of getting more people to subscribe to that network or try the free trial to see how this thing's going to play out in a full match. So we'll see what happens, but I think that was a smart decision on whoever booked this show.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it. I can see that. Especially given that, you know, one thing that I do have to remind myself is that the whole point of bringing Finn Balor onto the main roster is to expand the reach of to expand it beyond the NXT audience, right? So
yeah,
you know, the people who have seen the demon before are really not the ones who need to be need to be convinced to watch SummerSlam.
Nah, I mean...
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, NXT has sold out the Brooklyn Center once before, which was its biggest audience ever. It sold out Dallas, which I think was 10,000, not 15,000. I mean, the NXT audience is big, but exactly what you said, Mike, if you're an NXT lifer who's been watching it since the first TakeOver or before, you're going to watch SummerSlam because you love Finn Balor. But for all those people who bought a ticket to Corpus Christi because it's a Raw in their hometown and they don't really know what's happening, holy crap, they just saw something insane, and 100% they're going to watch SummerSlam.
It is totally insane, by the way. The writing on his body was a really nice touch. Because every time the Demon comes out, you know, I don't know how many times it's been on WWE television, but, you know, it's probably more than five, less than ten at this point.
Yeah.
And every time it happens, it is totally bizarre.
Yeah,
and that's a special thing.
Every time. Like, it's the same general look. It's the same big mouth, you know, on the chest. But, like, there's different things.
Like, yeah, like in Dallas, when he did TakeOver, he came out as Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah, and he was blue and red, not black and red, because that's the Texas Rangers colors. And when he came out at the end, he was full black and white, no red whatsoever. And, you know, the first time he came out, it was just kind of like a weird tail on his back. And then in Japan, he had a Japanese monster on the back. And then before that, he had the big eye again. And it's always slightly different. You don't really know what you're going to get. Which, I think that writing on the body was awesome, because this is going to be near and dear to your heart, Brian. But I think that was directly inspired by The Exorcist, where like the whole help me on her belly, like there's something coming out of him, that it is literally inside of him, and it's writing its name on his skin. You know?
Yeah, which was really cool. I mean, if you know, like, the guy Finn Balor, the real guy, he's really into comics, he loves pop culture, he likes horror movies, he likes sci-fi, he's really into that. So I think he really goes the extra mile in his character for that, which is cool.
Yeah. And always remember the name of this podcast, Wrestling is Everything, and everything is wrestling. Even moving back onto what Brian brought up earlier, Rusev is not only the greatest American hero of all time. This is a weird, weird match. And again, I was there live, and there's been a couple like posts on Reddit and other places where people like to be shitty about the thing they're supposed to enjoy watching. That said, like, oh, WWE is, like, again, pushing Roman down our throats, and they're altering the audio and that kind of stuff. People weren't actually cheering for him. I gotta say, the overwhelming majority of people in that building were cheering for Roman Reigns during that match. There was very few people that were booing him. Granted, the people that were booing him were booing him.
What's that sign?
But like, as a split, he had way more people behind him than he did booing him. Now, both Ryan and I were at WrestleMania 32, where quite literally 100,000 people were booing Roman Reigns. So, what do you guys think changed to make the audience go from nearly 100% hatred to, you know, a good 60-40, 70-30 split and actually wanting to see him more?
Well, so, what I think is, so you have Rusev and you have Lana. They're supposed to be heels. Like, they're supposed to be bad guys. They come out and they talk smack on everybody in the audience, everybody in the locker room. They're supposed to be the heels. And, like, they did such a good job with the wedding thing where they got the audience totally against them by saying, you should stand up, you should love us because we're who we are, and we're against America, and all your American stuff is stupid. Even though they're amazing, they got the audience to turn on them, and then you got Roman Reigns to hit the music and just come out. And finally, Roman kind of like is kind of himself. He's like funny finally. He's not that monotone like idiot. And he came out and he literally just started wailing on him. And then on this Raw that we saw, this past Raw, he literally kind of like, he didn't run to the ring, but he like walked fast to the ring and just started wailing. That was what we have talked about in the past wanting. And I think finally people are like, okay, good, good, good. He's going to take these guys on, and that's good. That's good for him right now. So that's why I think that that's the change. What's that? I hear like crinkling of paper or something like that.
Sorry, I think Ralphie was really trying to get at a leaf. But, you know, I think I'm going to question the premise here. I really think that that crowd reaction was very much a factor of being a smaller market and, you know, it being a raw crowd that brings out fans who are, you know, far less smarky on average than what we're going to see in Brooklyn. My expectation is that when it gets to SummerSlam on Sunday, you're going to see that 90 to 100% boo, you know, drown out anything Roman Reigns does, especially in light of the finish of the match, which saw, you know, kind of the people, the thing that bothers people the most about Roman Reigns is that regardless of, you know, kind of where the respective characters are in a Roman Reigns feud, Roman Reigns comes out on top. And to have them, you know, sort of give away the match on Raw is winning. I think that it really, for the crowd that's going to fill Barclays on Sunday, I think that it just makes Rusev the sympathetic babyface. And, you know, I think that be very much in favor. We're going to see that reaction that we saw on Monday. I don't think we're going to see that on a pay-per-view crowd.
While I agree that I think Corpus Christi is definitely a fairly traditional audience where they cheer the faces and the heels, that was pretty evident throughout the entire night. If you were a good guy, they were pretty much behind you. And if you were a bad guy, they were pretty much against you. So I think it's a fact. I think the greatest trick that the devil ever pulled was convincing the world that Roman Reigns is in the mid card. I think simply that he's now going for a lower belt against a perceived lower opponent. That is taking some of his massive heat off of him. Because I think you're right, Mike. I think Barclays is going to be, but because it's for something that quote unquote, I think the hatred, while he might not be, I don't think he'll be booed as much as WrestleMania. I don't think he'll be cheered as much as he was Monday, but I don't think the outpouring of please get this guy off my TV will be there anymore. Vince McMahon, despite not having changed anything, really changed that Roman Reigns is no longer as important, even though the last 2 weeks he has pinned cleanly, only singles champion on the roster, and the week before, he was the last thing you saw on Monday night, him standing victorious. 2 weeks and nothing has changed. He's just fighting a not Seth Rollins and not Finn Balor and not Dean Ambrose. He's fighting a quote unquote opponent, Rawls, and he's the hero they're building around. Like I said, until the Universal Championship comes out, the U.S. Championship is the top single full stop, and Roman Reigns is challenging for it. There's nothing. Nothing has changed except not as important. Which is
and that he did take back to back losses from Balor. So that was it basically would take, you know, a demo truck running him over in the middle of the ring. That was a big shift. Just thinking about, you know, his match with AJ Styles and, you know, the idea that Reigns was the right guy to win those matches. I'm just saying that the idea that lose two nights in a row was, that was a change.
I mean, obviously, he had never really, he had never lost clean in his entire career until Seth Rollins pinned him at Money in the Bank. That was his first clean singles loss, and even that match, Roman technically pinned Seth first, it's just the ref wasn't around to count it. So, really, through honestly, clean losses, he's had two, Ambrose and Balor, and those were pretty much back. But interesting that the bile for this man has calmed down considerably. He hasn't won those fans over. They're just not as aggressively against him. And like I said, literally, his booking really hasn't changed at all, aside from two losses in important matches. He's still gunning for a title, he's still the underdog, quote unquote, perceptive underdog going for a title. So it's just interesting to me.
It was a weird that like I said, like, and we did like, or I did a poll on it afterwards. Like, so if Rusev lost this match, does that mean he's winning at SummerSlam? Because why would you have Roman beat him twice? Like, why would you show the SummerSlam match on Raw before the SummerSlam pay-per-view? It didn't make sense. Because usually you have them come out and they fight for a few seconds and that, like, gets you ready for the match. But they had, like, the full-on, like, 20-30-minute match. And, I mean, it was excellent. But, again, you have Roman Reigns just doing a spear that nobody can kick out of, which doesn't make sense. So...
Yeah, let's throw it to the other brand split piece here, because I think we need to kind of do a quick little summary of where each brand is at. So, Brian, we'll just continue what you're with you. How do you think SmackDown is faring versus how Raw is faring? Virtually a month. Well, let's just call it a month into the brand split. If you had to give them a report card on how the booking is going and how everything is working, where do you see SmackDown versus Raw?
Let's see. They're both excellent. I'm a big fan of SmackDown because I like the underdog, scenario with it. And, I like Raw because a lot of our favorite wrestlers on it. I would have to say, I really like where SmackDown is more than I do like Raw. I think SmackDown is doing a better job with the characters, the stories, and the wrestling, I guess. Wrestling, they're both excellent, but I just like the cohesiveness, I think, to SmackDown than I do Raw. So, if I had to choose one, I would go with SmackDown this month, basically.
So, Mike, do you feel...
Yeah. Yeah, I like Ambrose as champion. I think that's the biggest thing for me. I think he's been a legitimate face champion in a way that, we haven't seen in a while, to be honest. And so I'm really interested in what he's doing, and I'm really interested in his feud with Ziggler, which is, I think Dolph's been really good. I think he's been the best he's been in a couple years. But I think Dean's been the anchor of that feud. He's been the one kind of making Ziggler have something to play off of. And so I tend to be a little more interesting from that perspective. Having said that, though, it's going to take a lot of perception that Raw is the more important of the two shows.
Yeah.
And, until that happens, I'm sort of more interested in SmackDown right now because it's a bigger shift for the show than what it was a month ago. It's improved in the last month, whereas Raw, I think has kind of, it's improved in spots and then, stalled in other spots. And so SmackDown kind of gets the better report card, but honestly, if we had to take one show off the air, I'd say keep Raw. It's still the number one show.
Yeah, and that's a good way to look at it. I'm in agreement with all of you as well. It's like there's stuff SmackDown is doing. The whole 2 hours thing makes it a lot easier to digest, And it seems like Daniel Bryan and Shane McMahon are actually putting together and booking a show. Like, you mentioned Ambrose, and when you look at SmackDown, everything on that show is anchored around Dean Ambrose. Like, he is clearly the most important person on it, as he should be, because he is the champion. And everything else is like a circle around that title, where I think on Raw, it's kind of like, okay, we have this match, and then we have this match, and then we have this match, and then we have this match. And sometimes those, you know, have to do storytelling over a couple weeks. But SmackDown really does feel like, you know, we have built a show around our champion, and there's also a division, and there's also a burgeoning tag team division, and we also have all these undercard feuds, and things are, it feels more like a show. And one of the things that I really like about it, I had never watched Talking Smack until last Tuesday, and I think it is absolutely phenomenal addition to SmackDown. Like, if you want to say SmackDown's technically 2.5 hours, because it has a half hour, you know, kind of like a recap. It's not even a recap. Have you guys watched Talking Smack ever?
No.
I have not.
I have not either.
It's really worth your time, and this is why I really dig it, is that Daniel Bryan is always the guest, he's always the co-host, and he treats it as though, okay, everyone, let's talk about the show that I just booked. Let's see what you think about how I'm doing as a general manager. Did you like that match? Did you like this? What can we do different? You know, what, you know, like, let's talk about how these feuds are going out. And it really addresses the show in a very kayfabe manner. You know, like, there was a great segment where, like, Renee asked Daniel Bryan, hey, you know, okay, what do you think went really well on this show tonight? And he was like, no, you tell me that. I'm the one that wrote it. You tell me what you thought of it. You're the audience. You tell me if it was good or not. And I thought that was a really good way to frame SmackDown as, hey, we put on a show every week. We book it. We write it. We put on a wrestling show. And not only what happened during it, but like, they bring in special guests. They bring in John Cena. They brought in Naomi. And they just talked about their ongoing feuds, and they asked them candid questions. Like, I think Daniel Bryan asked Becky Lynch, what do you want to see out of the women's division? And she bailed him. Like, we're all awesome competitors, and we need words. And it feels like that's something that Daniel Bryan will listen to and bring to the show in a later date. I mean, who knows when that'll happen. But it feels like he is actually being a leadership authority figure who cares about how his decisions are being perceived. And that, I just think it's a wonderful addition to SmackDown.
And,
if you haven't watched Talking Smack, it's only half an hour, and it really is a great addition to that show.
And I think Shane McMahon is, in that way, like Daniel Bryan. I think he genuinely wants to hear from the fans and know that he's doing a good show. I mean, Vince does it maybe to a much smaller degree, but I think that's what SmackDown has going for it. I think you have Shane and Daniel who really want to hear the good and the bad of their show so they can make a show that the fans really want.
So, and speaking of for the fans, I want to talk about Mike Pertil's favorite wrestler. He's on mute right now, so I'm going to push him up. Mike Pertil, for the fans, I want to hear what you have to say about a certain gentleman who's about 5'8", 155 pounds, with a handlebar mustache.
Are we talking about Jack Gallagher?
We're talking about your favorite wrestler, so please tell me it all about
So, delight. I'm absolutely stunned. Now, I have to back up. I have not seen this week's Cruiserweight Classic.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been saving it like, you know, whiskey. and so I should probably revisit I've seen it. This will probably have to be one for next week.
I'm sorry, listeners. I thought we could talk to see, but the Jack Gallagher. So this isn't a spoiler because it's been announced. But he fights Tozawa in his second second-round match. And while it's not as good as Bush, Cedric Alexander is not as good as Ciampa in terms of, like, emotionally draining great storytelling, but that match is a masterpiece of wrestling, and I cannot wait until you see it. I thought you loved him because you saw this match. This match?
No.
I can almost guarantee you, this match got him a contract with WWE. I can almost guarantee that if he shows up in NXT in December, it's because of this match.
Wow.
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I can tell you, and I guess I'll dive more into this when we talk Jack Gallagher next week, but I even did a YouTube deep dive. He's got like a MMA career going as well.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? And he wins, I think.
Yeah, well, that mustache isn't going to be losing any fights.
This was an excellent episode of the CWC. I'm super glad that this exists in our reality. So, Brian, did you see it this week?
I have not watched it yet, unfortunately.
Okay.
So
then we'll talk about it and some of the second round matches that are happening next week on our next podcast. Next week, I think is what did they say? I think it's Rich Swann. I forget. I'll have to look it up. But it's gonna be a good show. It's gonna be Zack Sabre Jr. versus Gulak is one of the matches, and I think the main event is Johnny Gargano versus TJ Perkins, and then the first match has Rich Swann in it, but I forget who he's wrestling. Doesn't really matter. It's going to be... Oh, yeah, I forget. We'll discuss some of the second-round stuff next week. But going into that, so we kind of talked about this a little bit before the show, but going away from WWE a little bit, I'm not sure how many of you out there in wrestling land are familiar with a promotion called Pro Wrestling Guerrilla. But coming up in a couple weeks, they kind of have their big marquee event called the Battle of Los Angeles. And we were kind of talking about this where I watch a lot of independent wrestling. I've gone to a lot of shows, and I take time to watch the highlights of the G1 on New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I watch Lucha Underground every week. Not that that's independent. But my co-hosts are very, very, very into the WWE world. They sometimes go out of it, but not a lot of it. And this Pro Wrestling Guerrilla really got all of our attention this year, and we all tried to get tickets to it. Mike's the only one that succeeded, which is nice because he lives in L.A. But what's interesting is that 1 year ago, if you showed Mike or Brian the card for the Battle of Los Angeles, they might recognize four names on it at most. So, Mike, now that the CWC exists and NXT exists, what brought you to Bola? Like, what's got you pumped about this event?
So, you're absolutely right. I was born and raised in the WWE universe. And I am, you know, I really only dabbled in anything outside of that. The exception of WCW when all the WWE then F guys were in the organization. So it was basically... you know, just another way to see characters that I had already grown attached to. What has me excited about this, honestly, is how much I enjoy NXT. You know that, and is that the show I'm most excited for every week on WWE programming is NXT, because they tell the more kind of classic wrestling stories that SmackDown have kind of, you know, they've sort of drifted into this different style of storytelling and of production. So, you know, every time there's a new NXT debut, it's often a guy who I'm sort of vaguely aware of, you know, Austin Aries being a good example, someone I'm vaguely aware of, don't have a ton of exposure to, and then within minutes, I'm very interested in this character one way or the other. So, you know, seeing the Battle of Los Angeles card and seeing, you know, kind of who was announced as the guys in it, never heard of, you know, obviously, like, there's in the tournament, so I've heard of him. You know, Matt Sydal's in the tournament. You know, Sami Callihan, you know, obviously Cody Rhodes is a huge one. But there were guys that I had heard of. And then there were those, say, kind of the NXT model, where I was vaguely aware of who they were. I had maybe seen one or two YouTube clips of them, but not much. And it just struck me as he has a sterling reputation for being just a wonderful version of show. You know, kind of taking that distinction between, you know, wrestling and like the WWE sports entertainment model. And as much as I love WWE and will always have this attachment to it, I also just love wrestling. I love the art of it. I love the spectacle of it. And so the chance to see that in, it's not exactly my backyard. It's going to be a beast to get there on a Friday afternoon, but you know, that's the burden of living in Southern California. But to have it accessible, I just felt like,
well, I mean, arguably, you are an hour away from potentially the most exciting and the most interesting independent wrestling company on the planet, which is pretty incredible.
That is incredible. Yeah. And the only, you know, the thing that is, the thing that's more incredible is this is my third attempt at trying to go to a PWG show, and the window for actually purchasing tickets is about 1 to 3 minutes, and I've missed it twice and finally nailed it this third time.
So before I go to Brian about his thoughts about independent wrestling, I would like to know, Mike, of the CWC, since these are predominantly independent wrestlers, almost entirely, I think aside from Tommaso and Gargano, and Rich Swann, who are WWE signed athletes, not counting Jack Gallagher, who do you want to see get a full time contract with WWE out of these new wrestlers you've been exposed to?
Okay, so I've got at least two, and so they're my definites. Grand Metalik, who I think is just fantastic, and who I saw WWE's like trying to get the trademarks for, so that one looks promising. And and then the French guy who lost in the first round, like Patois, or do I have that right?
I think it was Clement. So I know about the guy that kind of looks like an angry Lance Storm.
Yes, that guy. Like, I want to boo that guy for the rest of my life. I thought he was excellent, and could really be a cruiserweight, but could be a convincing, you know, can be a convincing heavyweight. I mean, I think that, you know, he's probably bigger than Finn Balor. So those two guys definitely on my list. Ho Ho Lund is not on my list.
So here's a slight spoiler for the Cruiserweight champion, the Cruiserweight Classic. Ho Ho Lund has a match, and Akira Tozawa has a match. Both of those people use a lot of German suplexes, and because their matches are right after one another, it is really obvious that Ho Ho Lund sucks at throwing suplexes.
Yeah. He kind of sucks at everything, and like, I don't mean to be a jerk about it, because like, I'm sure he's a high-end wrestler, and that this is just, you know, the guys that he's in there with, like, Paulo, you're talking about, you know, one of the best guys in the world, so it would be tough to do your job side-by-side with him, but he's really bad. He really does not belong. In the highest level. The other guy who I've been really disappointed in, and we've talked talked a little bit offline about how I need to be more patient and give him more of a chance, is Zack Sabre Jr. I was expecting, he was someone who I was a little bit more than vaguely familiar with before he showed up in the Cruiserweight Classic, and I was really disappointed, really underwhelmed with his performance. I thought he kind of came off as sort of the detached, arrogant heel without demonstrating, you know, the sort of physical excellence that you would expect to see from somebody with that mindset. He seemed to be, you know, it was tough for me to really get engaged in his match. I've only seen his first round match. I don't know if he's had a second round match yet.
That'll be coming up next week. So
okay.
To summarize here, the literal founder of the first ever Chinese pro wrestling academy, a.k.a. Ho Ho Lun, Mike Pertol says you can go fuck yourself. And the current PWG champion, the current Revolution Pro champion, you're also a sack of garbage. You don't have to say anything. So, but actually, before we get too deep into Zack Sabre Jr., because I have a recommendation for you both, Brian Kluger, two wrestlers that you want to see signed from the CWC, and talk to us about any experience you have with independent wrestling.
Okay, so two wrestlers from the CWC that I want to go to the main card, NXT, Raw. I mean, of course, Kota Ibushi.
Shit, that would have been a good one.
I want that guy in my face at all times. Just
the Golden Star. Yeah, he's incredible.
He is great. And another one from there that I've been really, really liking a lot is Cedric Alexander.
Oh man, that match was absolutely phenomenal. I don't think he's gonna have a hard challenge getting signed. But man, he has been so. If y'all aren't familiar with Cedric Alexander, he actually was in TNA for a while as a heavyweight and was never bad, but also never particularly good. He literally did drop like 25, 30 pounds to be in this tournament, and the dude has just been taking it to a level that he has never delivered on before. And that match with Ibushi 100% made him. I mean, he was the ultimate underdog. He played it like the ultimate underdog. He just couldn't keep Ibushi down, but he never gave up. Always kept trying. I think if they give that guy a contract, you have an automatic contender for their world title in a way that you haven't really had since like Sami Zayn, you know, where you know he's good enough to be champion, but he just always seems like he's not as good as the top guy.
Yeah.
I think Cedric Alexander will fill that void perfectly. So I'm with you, Brian. I hope he gets signed. So
yeah, those.
What about your past or future or present with the world beyond World Wrestling Entertainment? Do you have any?
Yeah, so you turned me on a while ago to two names that are going to be at the Battle of Los Angeles Pro Wrestling Guerrilla in a couple weeks. And those two names are Ricochet and Will Ospreay.
Oh, yeah.
Those two guys in those pro wrestling New Japan things, when they wrestled together, I've never seen anything quite like it. And, like, it got me hard for wrestling like it hasn't before since Kurt Angle first debuted. And Ricochet and Will Ospreay just... they need to be in WWE right now. They do so much in-ring work, and they get the crowd going. And it's like they're like Siamese twins. They know exactly what the other's going to do, and they can counter and flip and do everything. And because of those guys, I have wanted to watch anything and everything indie wrestling, because what indie wrestling has going for it that WWE doesn't, indie wrestling just does not give a fuck. They can do whatever they want. They can have a hardcore match. They can bleed. They could curse. They're not publicly traded like the WWE. They don't have to worry about stockholders or little kids. And that's what it has going. It breathes that life of the non-corporate aspect into wrestling again, and that's what I love about it.
Oh yeah, no, it's fantastic, and I'm glad you watched that match. So before we go on to our next, and we'll wrap it up here shortly because I don't want to take up too much of our listeners' time on our first episode. There's still a little bit to talk about, but since Mike is not quite so sure on Zack Sabre Jr.,
I love Zack Sabre Jr. by the way, I love that guy.
So, and I do want to point out that Mike is correct. If you went into that match not knowing who he was, besides he's supposed to be really good, then that match was not a good showcase for him, because I think he wrestled it as though everyone already knows who he is and why he's the best, which is not a good way to make a first impression. And I don't think he did anything super out of the ordinary. I think Mike's take on his being arrogant, I can certainly see how that came across. What I would recommend, however, is go back to I think it's pretty cheap online. Yes, I'm asking you to buy something, but if you go back and buy the Evolve, I think it's Evolve 58.
Yes, yeah, that's the one right by WrestleMania.
Yes, it's Evolve.
Yeah, it's Evolve 58.
It was on Friday night, and one of the main events of that show was Zack Sabre Jr. versus Will Ospreay, and it is an incredible match because Zack Sabre Jr. is not fighting another mat-based technical wrestler. He's fighting a crazy flip off the wall, jump off the ceiling, not so high flyer, and those two styles work so well together that I think you'll start understanding where Zack Sabre Jr.'s prowess and talent comes from. You might even be able to find the match itself on YouTube or something like that, but if you've never seen Zack Sabre Jr. wrestle or have only seen him wrestle his one kind of okay match in the CWC, please go seek out the match between him and Will Ospreay from Evolve 58. I'm not saying it'll change your mind or make him your favorite wrestler, but you will be tremendously entertained for about 20 minutes. So that's my homework for Brian and Mike, is go seek that match out and see how you feel about two of probably the best independent wrestlers in the entire world. So finally, just to kind of sort of wrap things up, before SummerSlam happens, NXT TakeOver Brooklyn happens. This is the second time they've done it in their biggest venue ever. It sold out almost immediately. And it's got some pretty interesting matches on it. So, Brian, what are you looking forward to with Brooklyn, and what are your expectations of this?
At NXT TakeOver Brooklyn?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be super bummed out. It's going to be a bummer, man. I might drink myself till I pass out if Shinsuke Nakamura loses. He needs to win. Shinsuke is rising to the top. He still needs to be undefeated. I just don't want him to lose ever. Ever. Even in a match against Brock Lesnar. I don't want Shinsuke to lose.
Spoiler alert, he's fought Brock Lesnar and he's lost.
Well, not in the WWE, though. but I mean, what I hope for the main event, which is Shinsuke and Samoa Joe, I think it's going to be an excellent match, because I think, unlike Finn Balor and Shinsuke, I think Samoa Joe has it in him to, like, just keep the match going at a really big pace, has more move sets, and really, they're both going to just, like, hit each other hard. And I think that's going to be an excellent, excellent match. Asuka has a match, right?
Against Bayley.
Yeah, against Bayley. So I think that match is going to be my second favorite match of the night. I think we'll finally see... I mean, I don't see – it's hard to say that if Bayley's going to win or not, because I think we saw Bayley come to Raw one night recently, and Or was it Raw or was it a pay-per-view? I can't remember. But she went into the main card.
She was at Battleground.
Yeah, Battleground. So I don't know if she's coming up and she'll lose or if she's going to stay in NXT for a little while and take it from Asuka. I don't know. But those two matches I'm like really, really looking forward to right now. Those are...
Yeah.
Those are the two. I think NXT Brooklyn has the potential to probably be just as good, if not better, than most of SummerSlam.
Oh, I think that's definitely the case.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's definitely the case. So, Mike, obviously I know that you're excited about anything Shinsuke Nakamura does, but
yes.
But is there anything else on that card that's kind of got your attention?
You know, I one thing about Shinsuke that I'm really interested in is how the main event, I've found, and we've talked about this on a previous podcast, I think one other time, is that I find that the main event slot at a takeover special is not a great place to be because the crowd is exhausted. They've seen at least two, maybe even three really excellent matches in the lead up to it. Really hard to top it. And so this card I'm excited about because it has a little more balance to it. You know, I think Bayley and Asuka is going to be an exhausting match. I think it's going to be great. And, you know, but there isn't that third match that right now jumps out to me as like, oh, this match is going to steal the show.
I mean,
the only one that I think is out there, and I hope it's the opener, just to kind of get the crowd going as opposed to wearing them out, is Revival versus Ciampa and Gargano.
Yeah.
So I've seen that match twice because they basically previewed it on the Texas NXT tour where I went to all three of those shows. That match on every card was match of the night. And I am a wrestling mark who knows exactly how house shows work, a.k.a. The challengers never win because it's a house show. Everybody in both arenas was yelling at the top of their lungs because Johnny and Ciampa should have won both matches. They were incredible, and even if they do a carbon copy of what they did in Texas, that is going to be match of the night, bar none. If they're able to top those matches, we'll be talking about it until WrestleMania next year. So... And
that's incredible.
Mike, you hit it right in the head. Shinsuke in general, but they have a lot to live up to because you're right. The bad thing about takeovers is that it is back to back to back to back amazing matches. And that's like almost to the detriment of the weekly television show because the weekly television show is a good story and there's good matches peppered in here and there, but nothing feels important like a takeover feels important. So
yeah,
when this happens, I think every match has the potential to be really good. Everyone performing on it is really good. But that match, like I said, I won't spoil anything. I mean, obviously they lost in their matches because they're not going to change belts on a house show. But it was every bit as good as, if not better, than Revival versus American Alpha. It was incredible.
So, no, but plus, I look forward to that match because that is for the NXT Tag Team Championship. But then you also have Bobby Roode coming to NXT versus Almas. You have, which I think will be a fun match, No Way Jose versus Austin Aries. I mean, they're both fun to watch. But I really, yeah, the tag team, I mean, the titles, basically, I think are going to really just... And I hope they space them out, like you said. I really hope that there's filler in between so we can regroup and pick our, you know, selves off the floor after each of those matches.
I mean, Alex, when Zayn Nakamura, Bayley Asuka, Joe Balor, and by the time Heyman came out with the chainsaw, I was like... Okay, it was so much to take in that, like, I do this thing when I get stressed out where I start to, like, kind of pull pulled my hair, and I was like pulling at my hair for 90 minutes straight. It's too much. So I like this idea that you'll have like Rude and Almas and Aries and No Way Jose. I'm with you, Brian. I think they're going to be fun to watch. Like I'm excited. I'm looking forward to watching them. But if they can give me a little bit of a breather between the title matches, I think the show will feel a lot more enjoyable.
Yeah, I do not. I think even though it might be a semi-insult to the wrestlers, I do not want to see Bayley Asuka be the second to last match, because it's just going to be so intense and so many emotions are going to be riding on it, because Bayley is so over and Asuka is a certified murderer, that it is going to be something that if you put the main event on right after it, it's going to be the exact same thing as the last Brooklyn, where no one really cared about the Finn Balor Kevin Owens ladder match, because Bayley Sasha was so perfect that, yeah, it's great. Fine, he won. That's fantastic. It's not a bad match, but, like, you're over. So I feel like they have to put, you know, Aries versus No Way Jose in that kind of, like, traditional Divas match spot where it's just there to give people 5 to 10 minutes of breathing room between Bayley and Asuka, because I don't think Bayley's going to win. I think Asuka is unbeatable, and I think this is the last time we see Bayley in NXT. I think she might even show up at SummerSlam. I don't know that's true, but I think she's not long for the NXT world, so there's no reason for her to go out on top. And like her goodbye in Brooklyn is not something you follow with a title match.
It's right, yeah. Just let Authors of Pain come out, squash somebody, like, just do something to give the crowd a break.
Yeah. But I gotta tell you, another independent wrestler making their debut, if you've never seen Ember Moon, a.k.a. Athena, holy shit, you guys are in for a treat. That is gonna be so good, and when you see her finisher, it's immediately gonna be your favorite finisher in wrestling. Think about it. Besides, just get ready to have your jaw hit the floor.
She was born where I was born, Garland, Texas.
Oh, I didn't know that. I knew she was from Houston or around Houston, but she's Dallas and Houston. I think when she used to come to the Inspire Pro Wrestling shows in Austin that I would go to a bunch, and she was always billed from like Dallas by way of Houston, or Dallas/Houston, Texas, like she would be credited from. But yeah, man, if you've never seen Athena/Ember Moon perform before, Billy Kay is a fine opponent. It's not like she's not going to cause it to be bad, but it's going to be the squashiest squash of all time. And like I said, like once you see what she can do, all you're going to be thinking about is that Asuka needs to actually be afraid of someone for the first time in her life.
Yeah, and she was trained by Booker T.
Oh, she's incredible. She's absolutely incredible. But like I said, like those promos they've done for her are awesome. They really build up like her mystique and how she's, you know, just kind of almost supernatural. And when you see her perform, and like I said, when you see her take someone out with her finisher, you're immediately going to be like, okay, so is she fighting Asuka the next pay-per-view? Because that needs to happen right now.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, too.
It's going to be real, real good. So before we sign off for the night, I've got a couple things I want to ask everybody. So number one is, Mike, what was your favorite thing about wrestling this week?
Favorite thing about wrestling this week? Let's see. It was Balor's entrance. It was the demon's entrance. It was still exciting to see it on Raw. I got excited for it.
My favorite part of wrestling this week.
So, Brian, what was your favorite part of wrestling this week?
Heath Slater for president. Heath Slater for president. That dude took on Brock Lesnar, didn't give a shit. And good God, Heath Slater is like...
Has Brock Lesnar give a shit about anyone's kids?
Yeah, dude, Heath Slater right there. Heath Slater, my man! I liked it. I went from 6 to midnight when that happened.
Man, I did not expect that to happen at all. And I marked out so hard when he came out. And the thing is that it's working. Whatever, like, he wasn't drafted. So he's appeared on both of them. And he's had matches with Randy Orton and Brock Lesnar.
Like, yeah, like the big, yeah, it's so crazy. It's so good, though. Yeah, that was my favorite moment.
Yeah, he's incredible. If you didn't watch SmackDown, Heath Slater is getting so over as a people want this guy to succeed that they actually, in Austin, actually booed Shane McMahon for not giving him a contract. That's how over, stealthily over Heath Slater is getting, which is insane.
That's really awesome.
I hope they capitalize that because he's something special. I think my favorite thing that happened in wrestling this week was I think it was the promo between Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler on SmackDown. They built it exactly the way a challenger champion should be talking about a title, which is the challenger, you know, needs it to validate himself as worth it or not a failed experiment or that all this hard work meant something. And the champion needs it to kind of validate the same thing, but to also kind of shit on the challenger's aspirations to be exactly like him, you know? No one did anything heelish per se. They were both still, you could see where both people were coming from. And I'm just super into seeing how that match goes because those two people have cut such great promos that more than anything, don't talk about why Dean Ambrose is the best or why Dolph Ziggler is the best. They talk about why that title is important and you believe it. Like you believe that the WWE Heavyweight Championship means something, which is something that you, like Mike alluded to earlier, we haven't had a champion that feels important in so long that not only does Dean Ambrose feel like he's the most important part of a certain brand, that title has a weight to it that hasn't been around. And this feud is really solidifying that titles mean something. So I'm so jacked up that we're actually feuding for a belt that if Dolph Ziggler loses, I'll feel bad for him. And if Ambrose loses, I'll feel bad for him because both of them deserve that belt. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, they've done an awesome job, and that was one of the greatest episodes of Miz TV in history, I think.
Yeah.
Can I tell you my least favorite thing in wrestling this
absolutely
week? So we talked about Battle of Los Angeles, and we talked about how we all tried to get tickets, and I was successful, and I had committed to going for night one, and I think Brian was going to go for night two, and so we ended up with just night one, and night one is on a Friday, and it's the Friday of Labor Day weekend, and to get from Orange County to Reseda, you've got to like basically go through the, you know, LA traffic hell. And so I'm thinking, all right, how about I trade my tickets for Friday for Saturday? And, you know, Friday and Saturday have, like, well, there's a lot of overlap in the card. But you know, like, there's pros and cons to both nights. So I'm thinking, you know, this is a fair trade. Prices are the same. It's still first round of Battle of Los Angeles. I take to Reddit Squared Circle. I, you know, write a concise but informative post and suggest that someone engage in a trade. I get 7 responses, all of which are, I'll buy one of those tickets from you. And it's like, hey, internet, nowhere in that post was there an offer to sell tickets. I want a strict trade to make my life easier. Maybe we both win. Instead, I got 7 offers to buy a ticket. Like 4 of them had LOL at the end, and it's like, is this an illusory offer? Like, what are you doing right now? And so my least favorite thing in wrestling this week was the internet reminding me that it is a horrible, horrible, unhelpful place.
Well, you're on Reddit. What do you expect?
Is it any surprise that the worst thing about anything is its fans?
I guess.
That's true.
So, guys, this has been the first episode of Wrestling Is Everything Is Wrestling. Whole bunch of new formats out over the next coming weeks. In fact, next week we're going to spend most of our time talking about the Viper, Randy Orton. Mike Pertil is going to do a very deep dive into his career and talk about what looks like post SummerSlam with his match against Brock Lesnar, how he got built up, and really we're just going to discuss everything having to do with Randall Keith Orton. So it's going to be interesting to have a focused discussion. Like I said, look for some interviews later on. Look for some more in-depth discussion about one or two specific topics. We still definitely are going to cover all the big WWE happenings and big happenings on in the wrestling world. But one of the things we want to try to bring to you is more focused a discussion on a single person or a single event or a single trend in wrestling. So anything you'd like to see us talk about, please shoot us an email. You can email us at wrestlingiseverythingpodcast@gmail.com. You can also send us suggestions on Twitter at WEWpod. Right now, that's all we have set up. We just have a Twitter account and a Gmail address. But we want to hear your stories about your interactions with wrestling. If it's just, maybe you saw Raw for the first time live in Corpus Christi, Texas last week. Like the friend I brought with me had never been to a live Raw before. Maybe that's what you want to talk about. Maybe you want to talk about why Vince McMahon is the stupidest person to ever live. If that's true, stop watching wrestling. It's never going to change for you, man. So that's really what we're trying to be about. So hopefully you enjoyed listening to us wax poetic about everything being wrestling and wrestling being everything. We will see you all next week.